Wanted to say to begin with that the whole concept of enlightenment, all the concepts of enlightenment present all kinds of stumbling blocks to actual awakening. So many people ask, is X or Y fully enlightened or fully awakened? Oh, Z is fully awakened. Is Osho fully awakened? Is Nisargadatta fully awakened? Was Robert fully awakened? There's assumption there built in that there's one end state that everybody goes to. And some get there and some don't. Some stop on the way. Some don't somehow fail to make it all the way. And you should only go to a fully awakened teacher in order to wake up yourself. But you have to understand this. Everybody already is fully awakened. The primal state. That which cannot be known is already you, within you. The only thing that prevents you from resting in ease in that primal state, the absolute, is your mind, the concepts. That divide up your world into a million different pieces with a million different processes and philosophies and agendas and moralities and shoulds and shouldn'ts and misunderstandings. If you could only become stupid like a rock and live your life, you would already be there. Not knowing. Being able to not know and to be comfortable with not knowing is really a key. Instead of using the mind to try to figure out all of these experiences and where they fit in, what role does the guru play? What role does the student play? What is the teachings of Robert versus the teachings of Nisargadatta? How are they the same or different? Are they talking about the same thing? Are they talking about something different? It's all bullshit. You're wasting your time using your mind trying to figure this out. You have to throw the mind away. The mind is causing the suffering. Trying to understand it, trying to make some sense of it, trying to contain it, trying to integrate everything that comes up. You are already perfect. You are already coextensive with love, love itself. It's in you. It's within your immediate grasp. It's only that your minds have become so strong. It interprets the world in your experience and excludes love. It excludes oneness. It excludes the absolute. And you think you are limited. You think you're a human being enclosed in a body. But there is no human being. The body is there as an object, but really your consciousness of the body, you're not the body. Even that consciousness of the body is not real, because you're actually the witness of the consciousness of the body. Your body is merely an object in your consciousness, one of many. And your consciousness is not really your consciousness. You are way beyond consciousness, witnessing consciousness. And you're witnessing the consciousness that appears to be associated with your body, therefore you accept yourself as a body, with all the body's pains and ills and wants. So already you are fully enlightened. You just don't grasp the fact because you think too much. You resist too much. You don't welcome your experience enough. You stifle some experiences, exalt other experiences. It took me 3 years before I surrendered to Robert, because I just watched him for 3 years. Is he my teacher? Is he for real? Doubt, 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 doubt. Well, he's this way, he's this way, he's this way, he's this way. No teacher's that way, no teacher's that way, no teacher's that way. A great teacher's that way. Ramana wouldn't do that. Nisargadatta wouldn't do that. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The mind goes on and on and on and on and on and resists and resists the teachings, and it resists your teacher. It resists each other. My husband is such and such a way. Ugh. My wife is such and such a way. Ugh. My girlfriend is nuts. My boyfriend is insane and angry. And poor me, having to put up with all this shit. And I'm so pure. It's the mind constantly judging, 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 judging. Measures brought from infancy, measures brought growing up. I should be such and such a way. He should be such and such a way. A relationship requires this. It requires authenticity. It requires trust. It requires this. It requires that. It's lacking in this relationship. So fooey in this relationship. I'll look around, but I'll stay in this relationship while I'm looking around. Jesus, there's no commitment to anything. No commitment to anything. Just doubts and doubts and doubts. Resistance after resistance. I don't like the chants that we're playing. I think we should use different chants. I think we should vary the chants. Getting old, having the same wonderful chants over and over again. Instead, let's try something new. Maybe we could do some Sufi chants for a change, or do more of the Yogananda chants. Maybe we should have less meditation. And more of your talk, Edgy. You're so wonderful. Don't read Nisargadatta. Read more of Nisargadatta. Explain Nisargadatta. Everybody has to give their 2 cents trying to change things. You know, I had a Los Angeles satsang going here for a time. And the people that were associated with that satsang tried to bring me into their world. Hollywood, the Hollywood lifestyle. I don't know why they thought I would like the Hollywood lifestyle. When I went to Phoenix with them, there's a restaurant there. It's a smorgasbord type, and it's inexpensive, and it's near my mom's house, and I always go there because I can get 8 or 9 different raw vegetables or cooked vegetables, and I'm a vegetarian, so that's all I get is 9 cups of different kinds of vegetables, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, whatever it is. And they couldn't stand it. There's nothing for me to eat here. And there was hundreds and hundreds of things. Dozens of different kinds of salads, dozens of different kinds of meats for the meat eaters, and there's fish, and there are all these raw vegetables and the cooked vegetables, and they couldn't find anything to eat there. So a week later, they tried to take me, or they did take me, to an expensive restaurant in Scottsdale, Mexican restaurant. And when we got there, they had nothing vegetarian. Nothing. Then we looked way down on the list, and on the back there was some vegetarian dinner entree, which I finally got, and it was awful. But that was their lifestyle, expensive restaurants. fast cars, money, opulence. And they thought I'd like it, but I didn't. I went to another lunch with them at a different place in Los Angeles, another of their select places to eat for lunch, and had some god-awful kinds of French fries. And they liked it. I couldn't stand the food. I mean, Jesus, I'm a simple guy. Please come into my world rather than to try to drag me into your world. I'm so lazy I can't leave my world. And I guess what I'm saying is, try to come into my world, into where I am, into the chance I know have such power, into the teachings I read from Robert or Nisargadatta. They have so much power. Try to leave your resistances at the door. Whatever happens in satsang is perfect. I'm the perfect guru. You're the perfect student. Just accept that for 90 minutes. And then after it's all over with, you talk to the other people at satsang and talk behind my back about what an asshole I am. Or somebody else is on the satsang. You know, that Alan is really a jerk. Did you see what he did? Tim, he never says anything. What the hell's the matter with that guy? You know, I think after spending, 35, 40 years in the spiritual world, get all the different teachers, all the different ashrams, all the different centers, I think the single greatest product in spirituality is, or two products, talking behind other people's back about each other and gossip in general. The teachings really aren't important. It's gossiping about other people at satsang, other teachers, other gurus, what they're doing. They're all trying to figure out what the fuck is going on by watching the externals. The teachers, the students, the behaviors, trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense of what's going on, trying to find consistent patterns, trying to find out how to run our life or rule our life based on watching other people, judging other people, etc. And it's still the mind. It's still the mind. We can't let go of the mind, become stupid as a rock, and just live from minute to minute. And really, it is a matter of becoming stupid like a rock. You feel the deeper that your meditation goes, that your mind is seizing up. Thinking stops. Thoughts no longer penetrate your skull. They're all driven out. You feel increasingly stupid. You can't figure anything out. A lot of people become extremely dysfunctional on the spiritual path. They can't do anything anymore. Especially if they have lots of responsibility, kids, job, etc., etc., it becomes harder and harder and harder. And you have to make a choice. Or you can integrate the two. Learn to live a little less functional and make a little less spiritual progress at the same time because you're not totally committed. You're not totally focused on the object, whatever that is, whether it's meditation, the teacher, the teachings, Nisargadatta, whatever. But there's nothing wrong with dysfunctionality. Joanne is falling apart. Our Mamaji is now crashing. She's becoming totally dysfunctional. We're going to have to excuse her from here on in. She's going to become like us. She's crashing and burning. Pretty soon she'll be too lazy even to go outside. Just to the refrigerator to get a beer. Go out in the back porch. Or else have Alan do it for. We're not in a race here. There's no race to perfection. It's race to who you are. And who you are has to be seen and appreciated from inside, not from your mind. The mind is not inside, the mind is on the outside. And it appreciates and judges everything from the outside. But actually, it's a matter of getting closer to your heart, your own heart, feeling love, feeling deep down inside. Your basic existence is the absolute, and not in this world, but and not of this world, but perceiving this world. You are entirely beyond it. There's nowhere to go, nowhere in this world to go. Ryan, you can't travel far enough to get away from yourself. Try Tibet next. It won't work. You can't get any further away from yourself than you already are. Nor will traveling to any temple get you closer to the self. You already are as close as you can get. It's just that you have a temple that's blocking you from seeing yourself. By the way, Alan is now known as Algy after his oceanic experiences. I like Algy. Isn't that a great name? Depending on how you spell it, too. Alji or Algae. You are already home. You already are home. You could die tomorrow and you've already made it. And as to a completely awakened teacher, as my friend David said, the awakenings never stop. They just get deeper and deeper and deeper. And you sink ever more deeply into the mystery of yourself. Robert, I understand, Mary was telling me that Robert confided in her in 1996 or 1997, probably 1996. He died in September, I think, of 1997. He confided to Mary that he finally understood something that Ramana had said. 55 years after his initial enlightenment, he finally understood something Ramana had said. He had a final awakening experience in the last year of his life. Ramana also had another major single event type of awakening experience is 17 years after the first. But there's always a deepening that goes on continuously. Zen Master Joshu had his first awakening experience. Kensho at age of 60. He died at age of 120, supposedly. When asked about his awakening, he said, during the past 60 years, I've had 17 major enlightenment experiences, Satori, and thousands of small ones. To the deepening. If you're really stupid and thick like I was, it takes a long, long time. Or you do it like Dia did it, an extremely painful, tortuous way for 9 years of loving and surrendering, feeling pain, wanting, desire, love, loss, being rebuffed, 9 years of endless pain, she said. It's no cakewalk for most of us. But the way that Nisargadatta teaches, the way I teach, I think, is faster than most, because it combines understanding of getting rid of the mind with the emotionality of having the emotional power behind the search to make everything go faster. It's more intense. Now that's a chant. That recording is over 30 years old, one of the original Muktananda ones. When Chidvilasananda and Yitananda took over, each changed the chanting style of Siddha Yoga. She made it very effeminate chants, the same chants, different sounds, everything, and it sort of took the power out of it. And Nityananda is more powerful and crude, but that original chant we just listened to had everything. It had elegance, power, the kundalini. It was beautiful. It's beautiful. And there's nothing that matches. I've not found in spirituality any kind of chants that have the kind of impact on my psyche that is helpful to me as this chanting, not Sufi, not anything else, none of the other gurus. This Chaitananda style of call and response between men and women, the drums, the harmonium, the sitar, all of this, it's magic, the kind of effect it can create on the mind. Now for the erudite section of this satsang, where I read from Nisargadatta. And he then supplements what I just said in the last part. Maybe I should take my questioner. How can I be in my true state and lose my fear? Come on, Lakshmi. Come on. Come on. Hi. Hi, baby. You can come here. How can I be in my true state and lose my fear? Maharaj, you are already in your true state. Because of the mind, duality comes in and therefore you are afraid. The association with the body and the mind is because of love for the body-mind. That is going to go away. Therefore, everyone is afraid of death. I gotta read this again. How can I be in my true state and lose my fear? You are already in your true state. Because of the mind, duality comes in, and therefore you are afraid. Because of the mind, you are afraid. The association with the body and mind is because of the love for the body-mind. That is going to go away, and therefore everyone is afraid of death. You see, this magic glue that we all talk about of love is also a trap. Love of the body-mind, of the I am. That is our primary motivation in everything. And that's all going to pass away. And because we know that it's going to die, we're afraid. The world is given to, this is the question, the world is given to me by my senses. When you go beyond that state of I am-ness, do you experience the world? Maharaj, there is no question of going beyond. I was never born. will never die. In other words, I'm not part of the I am. I'm beyond the I am. Whatever is all the time. Going beyond is only an idea meant to remove all other ideas you have accumulated. You think about birth. Do you know anything about your birth? No, I do not know that I am born. I feel that I am really not born, and yet the world seems so real. Do not worry about the world. First start from here, the I am, and then find out what is the world. Find out the nature of this I. Why find out about the I which is not real? That's the question. Why find out about the I which is not real? And Maharaj responds, it is the seed from which everything comes out. If the seed is not there, the universe is not. How have you come into this so-called objective world? Here everything will be wiped out. I invite you, in your own interest, to go home. To go home to yourself. To go beyond the I am. Find yourself in the absolute, resting in the absolute, which you always do anyway, but you don't see it because the world is so bewildering, and love takes you into the world and into the I and into the body. The world is given to me by my senses. When you go beyond the state of I amness, do you experience the world? To which Maharaj replies, there is no question of going beyond. I was never born. I've always been beyond. You're not going beyond. You are beyond. Right now. Only your mind makes you think that there is a going beyond. Says it's used as a pointer to get rid of all other concepts. But really, there's no question of going beyond. I was never born. I will never die. Whatever is all the time. In other words, the absolute always was. And the I amness and all of consciousness springs from the absolute. So the universal consciousness is always here playing its games. Having us various instantiations where a body appears to become conscious and plays a minor role of something or other. Going beyond is only an idea meant to remove all other ideas you have accumulated. You think about birth. Do you know anything about your birth? No, I don't know that I am born. I feel that I'm really not born, and yet the world seems so real. Do not worry about the world. First start from here, the I am, and then find out what is the world. Find out the nature of this I. Because when you look inside long enough and you're dumb enough, and it takes many years, and you see that there's nothing that the I word points to, there's only emptiness, there's only nothingness, there's only space, it suddenly dawns. There's no world either. If the I isn't there, the world is not there. The world is something we project outside. We say this is outside, all of this is outside, while I am inside. And when the I disappears, the externality of the world disappears. It's not that the world ceases to exist, it's just that we see it's in us. The world is in us. We are greater than the world. We contain the world. There's no external existence. It's just me. I am the only one, as Buddha said. From the sky above to the earth below, I am the only one. This is all me. And yet, in a deeper sense, it has nothing to do with me. In the ultimate sense, even this I amness and the consciousness that springs from the I amness, that the consciousness that springs from the body is only temporary. It passes, as he says, and we're afraid of that passing because we identify with the body and the consciousness through love of the body and consciousness, through love of another person. But at heart, we have a deeper love. All of us have a deeper love, and that's for our home, knowing our true nature. This is the deepest love at the heart of a seeker. Who am I really? Am I this body with all of its energies and lusts and loves, with its hungers and fears? Am I my intellect, which is finding my way in the world, constantly judging, comparing, thinking, measuring, suffering? Am I all those fantastic panoply of feelings, especially of love, that's supposed to be the highest feeling, that's supposed to hold the universe together? Am I even that? Or does that too pass? Of course. Even if we're the greatest lover, love changes constantly. Changes colors, becomes motherly love, fatherly love, sibling love, lover love, all kinds of loves. And then it's gone, disappears every night for 6 or 7, 8 hours. Even the next day, even if we're a constant lover, it's not there for the other 16 hours. It varies. And it has its ups and downs, ins and outs, punctuated by rage, jealousy, and 100 other feelings. Is this real? Yeah, it's real in the sense of an experience. But it's not our deepest level of beingness. It's beyond beingness. It's that which perceives beingness. And in understanding that we are beyond this, beyond the I am, beyond the drama that we create every day and are immersed in every day, there's such peace and happiness. Peace so deep that even the ecstasies and the bliss of love cannot compare. They're like the foothills of true understanding, true knowledge. All those blissful ecstasies that filled the body with love, the movements of love and of bliss, pale in comparison to, as Robert said, the peace that surpasses understanding. I guess that's from the Bible. When we know we are the foundation of the universe, the entire universe does not exist without us. It's all contained within us. Okay. Let me see. Another less interesting one. I like that passage just now. It's so rich. Maharaj. This is July 19th, 1980. Which is page 31, and the previous reading was page 35 from July 21, 1980, for those of you who are transcribing or want to look up these passages. This is July 19, 1980. Maharaj, in this spiritual hierarchy, from the grossest to the subtlest, you are the subtlest. From the grossest to the subtlest, you are the subtlest. How can this be realized? The very base is that you don't know you are, and suddenly the feeling I amness appears. This is very important. The base is that you don't know you are, and suddenly the feeling I amness appears. The moment it appears, you see space, mental space. I call that, what did I call that? The subtle body, it's called. I talk about it in the advanced teachings on the website. I forgot what I call all those things, but you can get into it more there by reading that on the either the I Am, It Is Not Real, or the We Are Sentience website. The moment this I Amness appears, you see space, mental space, that subtle sky-like space. Stabilize you there in that space. You are that. When you are able to stabilize in that state, you are the space only. And this is what happens when the first realization comes. There is no I, there is no center. And when there's no I, there's no external world. All that there is space, which you are, which contains everything. The identity shifts from being some imagined entity inside of your body to an identification with the inner space and the external space. You are spaciousness, which contains all objects, all feelings, all thoughts, all knowledge. When this space-like entity, I am, disappears, the space will also disappear. There is no space. When the I am-ness disappears, space disappears. When that space-like I am-ness goes into oblivion, that is the eternal state. What is left over after the I am-ness goes is the eternal state. Nirguna, no form, no beingness. Actually, what did happen there? The message I am was no message. Dealing with this aspect, I cannot talk much because there is no scope to put it into words. There's not much you can say about no form, no beingness. It doesn't have any qualities. It doesn't have any characteristics. It doesn't have any function. It's unknowable, unfathomable. You can only experience it. You can only be it. You can't talk about it. You can't grasp it with your mind or even with the heart. It's beyond the heart. It's where the heart melts into the absolute, into formlessness. And that's why all of your hearts are burning. It's to burn itself out so you can find the absolute. It's like, I guess you could call it a purification process, but really, it's letting the I am-ness burn so that you know that you're not the I am-ness. You focus when the burning is happening, the focus is on the I am, and that's as it should be. That's the practice, to focus on the I am. And the more intensely, the faster it goes. But ultimately, you're beyond the I am-ness, beyond the beingness. You are never born. You will never die. You're just watching this. And in the meantime, you're identifying with the I am-ness and the burning right now and the yearning. Does Maharaj go into Samadhi? Maharaj, I am stabilized in the highest. There is no going into Samadhi or coming out from Samadhi. That is over. Should we continue our meditation? It doesn't mean this is an excuse for you to give up meditation. You must persist in meditation until you come to a stage when you feel there is no meditation. When the purpose of meditation is gained, it will drop off naturally. Which is the way to the supreme state? There is no question of going into that state. You are the supreme state. But whatever ignorance you have will drop off. This is very important. There is no question of going into that state. You already are in that state. It's buried in you. You cover it with your mind. What happens is the spiritual process is a dropping off of these ignorance of the concepts of all the loves and the messiness in your life to see the purity of the supreme state and find rest there, find peace there. Okay. Okay. This is the first of the no bullshit seminars. I'm trying as hard as possible to get rid of all of the misconcepts, misunderstandings about gurus and teachings and all these states that you're going to and perfection of the guru and everybody's more enlightened than other people and all that kind of stuff. It's a bunch of crap. It's all of this is a bunch of crap from the ultimate point of view. You are already beyond it. Just your need to gossip keeps you here. My need to gossip. Your need to love. To take care of kitty cats. Like this little jewel. Any questions? You know that in the majority of the bhajans, all that you do is sing the various names of God, whether it be Krishna, Ram, or any of the other forms of God. Hail God, Ram. Hail God, Krishna. All the chants are like that. You're talking to the divine. And actually, you're going to go beyond the divine. To the primordial state. The absolute, which you are. And from all of this comes, including God, including the divine. You are the basis of the divine. Even the divine depends on you. Even the divine depends on you. Good night. I love you all, my family, our family. Bye-bye.